Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 234. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about slave castles, beaches, and fufu as we go to Ghana. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We have two news stories for you today. The first one is a frightening one. A gun was taken from a suicidal JetBlue pilot in the crew lounge in the Logan International Airport in Boston. Those are a combination of words that you really just don't want to see used together. But fortunately, the pilot is under observation and nothing happened. The second story is a set of words that I do like to hear together. Pushy flyers may show up on the TSA's radar. What that means is if you are one of those people who likes bullying the TSA agents or putting your fist into walls, you may end up in a TSA database and be strip searched for the rest of your life. That's a rule that I can live with. Check out the links to both these stories in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by Audible. You can sign up for an Audible subscription, get a free trial, free subscription for 14 days, and a free book with that by going to amateurtraveler.com/freebook. One interesting thing I noticed on Audible this week is that Pauline Frommer, who has been a guest twice on this show, has two different walking tours of New York City. The Frommer's Best of New York City audio tour, as well as the New York City Chinatown and Lower East Side walking tour. And both of those are available on audible.com. So remember, amateurtraveler.com/freebook. I'd like to welcome the show Lily Marshall, who's come to talk to us about Ghana. Lily, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And Lily is a blogger who blogs at aroundtheworldl.com. So you've been traveling around the world, but you spent some time in Ghana. What led you to do that?
Well, before traveling, I was a teacher, and I had saved up money and began my travels in Southeast Asia. And I was there about 4 months when I realized I really wanted to go to Africa. So I began researching different countries and where I should go, and Ghana emerged as sort of the top candidate for the safest, most friendly, most interesting country for my purposes, and it was English-speaking. And I also was linked up with a very interesting volunteer opportunity, so it just worked out perfectly.
So you were volunteering in Ghana doing teaching, as I recall.
I was working with a youth center called Youth Creating Change, which I ended up finding through couch surfing, of all places.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I joined the Ghana group, and I sort of introduced myself and said, well, I'm not looking for accommodation right now, but I'm looking for any volunteer opportunities. And I got about 5 different emails, and one of them was from Youth Creating Change.
Interesting. I wouldn't think to look for that on couch surfing.
Yeah, couch surfing has been amazing with volunteer opportunities and get-togethers and things beyond housing.
Interesting. So Ghana, is your most indelible memory of Ghana?
The students that I worked with were amazing, and my coworkers were amazing. To me, the treasure of Ghana is really the people. I've rarely worked with such hardworking, smart, kind people, and I have never worked with such well-behaved children.
And this might answer the other question, was what was your biggest surprise?
The biggest surprise. Yeah, it was walking into a classroom packed with kids and just having them completely attentive and respectful, but also just generally the connection that I felt with everyone. Because it's a very different country than mm-hmm. America. Obviously, it's a developing country and there are so many differences. But I think that so much of the roots of American culture are from West Africa. And so I was really surprised at the number of commonalities that I had with both students and coworkers.
Now, if I were going to go to Ghana and not necessarily go as a volunteer teacher opportunity, what would you recommend that I see?
Perhaps because of Obama's visit, one of the most famous parts of Ghana is the Cape Coast slave castles. Mm-hmm. And this is this a sort of disturbingly beautiful white building, this castle on the ocean, where West African slaves were held before they were passed through the door of no return and shipped off across the ocean. So I was able to visit that and had a really powerful guide take us through the dungeons. At one point, he closed the door on us and turned out the lights for about a minute, and everyone screamed and freaked out. And then he opened the door and said, "And that is 1 minute of how it would have been to be down here." He ended with a poem. So I think Cape Coast Castle is an absolute must.
And where is that near?
It took about, I'd say, about 3 hours west of Accra, the capital. Mm-hmm. So it's quite accessible. Ghana also has a national park called Mole National Park to the north, which unfortunately I didn't get to because it's quite far. I think it's about 8 hours minimum to get up there. But I've heard it referred to as the world's cheapest safari. So apparently you can bop around there and see elephants and giraffes and other wildlife for a fraction of the price of Tanzania or other places.
Interesting. That's funny because the safari in Tanzania that I took wasn't all that expensive. So
really?
It depends. There's a wide range depending on what you do and where you stay. From as cheap as a few dollars if you're a local resident just taking the bus in to luxury accommodations with your own cabin boys and things like that. So quite a range.
Well, I guess this wouldn't be a fraction of a few dollars. It would probably
be a little. Well, I'm not a local, so you'd probably have to pay different prices. So as we came in, I assume we'd come in through Accra.
Yes.
And what kind of itinerary would you suggest to see Ghana?
You have to remember that the whole 3 months I was there, I was based in Sogokope, which is 2 hours to the east of Accra. It's sort of the thinnest part of the guidebook. So my experience was somewhat different from other people's experience. But I could see a loop being made, spending a little time in Accra, which I personally found somewhat intense and a little dusty. And it was difficult for me to spend a lot of time there, but it was interesting to be there. Apparently, Lonely Planet rated it the second most disagreeable city or distasteful city for them in the world, which some people had problems with. But I can understand it's hot and dusty.
And was that your first experience in Africa, or had you already...
My first time in Africa, yeah.
Interesting. So you started in Africa in what Lonely Planet thinks is the second worst city in the world.
But I was picked up by the head of Youth Creating Change, and we jetted out of there after a quick night in a hotel there. I didn't spend that much time there to begin with.
Okay. And you said spending a couple days there, what would one do? You haven't painted a picture right now that has us wanting to spend a lot of time there yet.
I would say perhaps even leave Accra to go directly to Cape Coast, where there would be more tourist infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Really, what was so powerful for me about my experience with Ghana was sort of just following around people who were working there. So to be honest, I almost feel like you can make an itinerary, and I could visualize an itinerary that would go Accra briefly, Cape Coast, and then going through, I've heard Kumasi is very interesting, and then going north to Tamale. It looks to me like Tamale, but it's not. And then going north to Mole, and then doing a loop and coming down. There's a town called Hohoe, which has waterfalls in it, and going along the coast. But I feel like in Ghana, you can't totally go wrong with sort of finding an organization to stay with for like a week even, and sort of getting to know the people and following them around to wherever they may go. So, for example, one of my coworkers was teaching part-time in a small town. It took about 5 hours to get there from where we were, even though it wasn't so far. But I was able to kind of follow him there and spend an entire day at that school where they basically had never had visitors before from, I guess, Europe or America. I feel like there's a lot to be said in Ghana for doing some of the main tourist things, but also somehow finding a way to be integrating into less touristy parts of the country.
Okay. And when you say less touristy, did you find, even at the Cape Coast, is there that much tourist infrastructure there?
No.
Okay.
I had come from, thank you, I'm glad you asked that. I had come from Southeast Asia, which, even though, you know, Laos and Cambodia are poorer countries, mm-hmm. they have amazing, amazing tourist infrastructure. It's just so easy to be a tourist in Southeast Asia. Cape Coast, while it had a little more infrastructure, I just was constantly shocked at the difference between Southeast Asian tourist infrastructure and that in Ghana.
Contrast it for us. So you're talking about the hostels being different or no hostels at all or restaurants or level of cleanliness, or what were the differences between the two?
In Southeast Asia, there's very much a hostel culture. Mm-hmm. It's not hostel, like let me kill you, like hostel as in let me stay.
Hold on right now, Bangkok has gotten a little dicey.
It's got a little bit. Unfortunately. So I was just actually browsing Hostel World in preparation for this interview. Mm-hmm. And there are places to stay around Ghana that you could stay in a private room for about $20 and it would be perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the hordes of other travelers who you can kind of recognize as travelers, that just isn't there. And I think that's kind of the first thing. There isn't the volume of travelers.
Sure.
That you see in other places. Like, really, there isn't. And you can go for a long time and feel like you're kind of the only visitor around. And in the area where I was, the term for white person is yevu. And so wherever you'd walk, you'd have little kids really excited and doing a little dance and going, yevu, yevu, yevu. And even in Accra, actually, the word for a white person there is abroni. So you would hear that everywhere as well. So really, wherever you are, you feel like it's a special visit. You feel like you're not in a pack of tourists as you are in other places. To continue it, for example, Southeast Asia, there's free Wi-Fi everywhere.
Sure.
Ghana, in the 3 months I was there, I saw a huge explosion of the amount of, even the speed of the internet got a little bit faster when I was there. It really is developing, but it's still really behind what is in other countries. It's really slow. Certainly, you're not going to see the free Wi-Fi along the riverbanks that I saw all through Cambodia or Laos. And in terms of transportation, I found it a lot more confusing for me than in Southeast Asia.
Just because more of the information that was available for transportation wasn't in English.
Well, it's in English because it's an English-speaking country, mm-hmm. officially. It felt to me confusing and overwhelming. Like, you can take a private taxi, which isn't that expensive, mm-hmm. but the main way that people get around is by Trotro. It's like a shared minivan bus, kind of.
Packed with people, I assume?
Yeah, packed yep. with people. And ranging from literally falling down and breaking down all the time to somewhat air-conditioned and sleek. So I just found that system somewhat confusing for me. It's definitely workable. Just it was harder than traveling through Southeast Asia, where you get on a bus with all the other tourists and it's clearly marked and, you know, maybe there's delays, but it just feels like you're in a flow of tourism that's really well oiled.
Okay. And so this is a good country to go to if you want to connect with the culture. And if you don't, go somewhere else, because you're going to be the only tourist for days at a time. And so hence the volunteer opportunity being a wonderful way to do that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say you'd be the only tourist. You definitely do see tourists, and mm-hmm. in Cape Coast you see tourists, and in other places as well you do. So it's not complete isolation, but it's very easy to become the only tourist in a place.
Okay. And then you had mentioned walking into the classroom packed with kids. Now, my experience in sub-Saharan Africa is that packed with kids can mean 100 kids in one classroom, 3 at a desk, 3 books in the whole classroom. Is that same sort of situation here in Ghana?
Well, I was lucky to have a really wide number of schools that I ended up working with, mm-hmm. because the youth center, I worked at the youth center, but then also we would go out to different schools every day, so in a cycle. So there was a whole range. We were mostly working with schools that had maybe like 40 kids in a classroom, which isn't
ridiculous. Too bad, right?
That's actually the average in California now, I think. But I was definitely struck, I think, more by resources. And as you would imagine, I suppose, but technology, just every place I went, the principals kept being like, if there's any way that you can get us a computer, that would just be wonderful. If we could only have a computer. So school after school without any computer at all. And then a number of places where they asked for a computer. In fact, they didn't even have electricity. I mean, the resources are a huge challenge. And yet at the same time, I just felt so uplifted by the positive spirit of the students. And I was just overall really impressed with the schools.
The best day you had in Ghana?
Well, let me steer this to food.
I just marked on my questions here. Don't forget to ask about food. Okay.
Okay, well, we can go. The best day in Ghana. There were a lot of best days in Ghana. Of the 9 months that I spent traveling, it was the part of my around the world journey that had the most heart, I guess. It felt the most connected. So, okay, we're going to talk about food later?
No, we can talk about new food now if you want to. If your best day involves food, we'll talk about food now.
There were many best days, but really the first month, there was just day after day that was just magical to see some place that was so different from where I was from. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't really begun my teaching yet. So we would just walk around town. This would be Sogokope, but really any traveler could do this in any part of Ghana. And I would walk around with Ghanaian coworkers and a camera, and they would just point out different things. So the first thing is, in Ghana, everyone carries everything on their head. Mm-hmm. So you walk around and it's just endlessly fascinating to watch people walk by with these giant piles of things on their head. I've seen, in fact, entire computers on people's heads several times, like just anything. And so you could just watch that. Second, the clothing is stunning. There are these multicolored cloths that people buy in market, and then they're custom made, which you too, as a traveler to Ghana, can do for about $10, a custom made gorgeous outfit out of the cloth of your choice. So you can just walk around and look at that, or take pictures with people, or chat with them about their outfit. There were coconut cellars everywhere, so someone would slash one open with a machete, and you can drink that. Just feeling the way it feels when it's really, really hot and the sun is really big. Mm-hmm. Walking around and having these little children come up and chat with you. Every day where I saw something new, which was basically every day, it was an amazing day.
You talked about taking your camera everywhere. What picture or pictures just really captured the place for you?
I would say a picture of a whole bunch of exuberant children running towards the camera and screaming, "Yeah, woo!" And including some who I knew, who actually knew my name, which was nice after a lot of yahoos. And then in the background, having a woman with a gorgeous outfit with something giant on her head, I think would capture it. And then seeing the sun be bigger than I've ever seen in my life behind this, that would capture it.
Excellent. You started to mention things to eat.
Oh, I did. In Ghana, the general idea is, one, you eat with your hands, and you do not use your left hand.
Okay.
You have a pile of dough-like substance, which can be either banku, which is sort of a Play-Doh mushiness, and it's made, I think, from cassava, or you can have fufu, which is a slightly softer Play-Doh-type consistency, or you can have a yam. So you have this either Play-Doh or yam. Then you have a stew, which can be all sorts of delicious things, but sometimes it's sort of tomato and vegetable-y based, I guess. Or you can have palm nut. So then you pinch off a little piece of this Play-Doh-like dough. You mash it around in your right hand. You put it a little indent in. So it is, as one student called it, an artificial spoon. And you dip it into the stew, getting a little tiny pool of stew, and then slurp it into your mouth. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And I'm kind of angry at a particular guidebook, which will not be named, but
go ahead.
No, because I like this guidebook. Okay, fine. It's the Brandt guidebook. I like it because he's just completely like sassy and uncensored the whole guidebook. He's like, oh, this place isn't worth it at all. But I just feel like he's wrong a lot of times. And he hates all of these foods like Funku and Fufu. He calls them gelatinous and tasteless. And to be honest, some of the volunteers just absolutely could not eat them. So I suppose it's a matter of taste. But there's just something about it. Like sticking your hands in this dough and then sticking it in this warm, slimy soup. Oh, they put okra in it a lot, so it gets a little slimy. And then slurping it right in your mouth. That's just, it's like a full body eating experience. It's amazing. I love it. And then you're covered in, usually it's like oily redness and dough afterwards. And so they give you a little bowl of water to wash up, which usually wasn't enough for me. I needed like a bath after each meal. Also, I saw a lot of fish, especially tilapia, and so that would go in the stew often, or you could eat it with bangku with the dough and some onions and just kind of mush it all together and pull off pieces and put it in your mouth, and that was delicious.
What do you wish you had known before you went to Ghana?
Before I went, I read that, especially if you have a volunteer position, but I think this would go for a lot of things. I read that it will seem like things are not happening. Like it seems like you're just sitting around or no one is working or nothing is happening. But in reality, everyone is working all the time. And in reality, things are going kind of as fast as they can go. So for example, when I first began my volunteer placement, I was like, I feel like I should be teaching right now. I need to go right away. I was confused about who was working. But then it became clear that really everyone was working constantly because I lived with all of my coworkers. And so it took about a month and a half for me to realize how hard everyone was working, but it's just, it's a different way than you're used to. And I can't entirely explain it other than that. But just if people tell you that, know that it's true. It's definitely true.
It sounds like it might be similar. Some of the things I ran into is a different sense of time. A different sense of punctual, for instance, didn't really have the same. Even going, we did something like going to church. Well, when does church start? When the pastor shows up. You know, just a very different, we're not run by the watch, by the clock. I don't know if that's similar to what you're running into.
Well, I think it may be two things on top of that. Well, the first thing is that there is a notion of African time that things are late. And basically every country has this. Like there's Ecuadorian time, everything's late. There's this time, everything's late. But
really, it's just us who are weird, I think is really.
But the organization where I was working, Youth Creating Change, their motto is be the change. So they had this really big punctuality goal. Okay. They were always emphasizing it with students. And if students were even a little bit late, they would have very strict punishments, as I saw throughout Ghana, such as they would have to cut with a machete all of the grass behind the YCC guest house, which actually I think it's just so effective. The kids respected it and they really appreciated having these rules. I would say that there is sort of a concept of getting on time, everything's not on time, but there are a lot of people who are working to change that. And then the second thing is, it's so hot.
Sure.
It's so hot. You can't, like, you literally, you'll die if you move fast. You can't. And so to stay alive, people kind of move at a slower but more steady and extended pace. And they wake up crazy early and stay awake really, really late, too, to take advantage of the cooler hours.
Interesting. And one warning you would give?
A big warning. I looked at a map of Ghana and saw this luxurious coastline and got really excited for the beaches. Now, there are two problems. The first problem is that there are really strong undertows, and so it's apparently inadvisable to swim in many of the beaches. But the second problem is people are defecating everywhere. And there's one or two pictures on my blog where I was able to capture this, but there are just... In fancy resorts, okay, not really, but you walk even just a little bit outside and you will always see someone squatting and doing a little number two action right about 10 feet away from the water. So you're having this romantic stroll along the beach and you will have to walk by someone who will quickly pull up their pants and then leave a little steaming pile for you as you walk by. So
good to know.
Don't get too excited. There are other things to Ghana that are wonderful, but beaches, didn't like. Good pictures, though. The pictures come out well.
Interesting. You had a chance to meet a lot of people, to interact with some of the locals. Who made the biggest impression on you?
The head of Youth Creating Change, John Glidden. I would say the entire YCC staff, but he is one of the founders, made such an impact on me because he's dedicated his life for the past 6 years to creating this youth center to create change in his community. Mm-hmm. And he's never been outside of Ghana, but he's been able to draw in all of these other volunteers from around the world. And he said whenever he feels frustrated that he can't leave or that he doesn't have the opportunity, he realizes that all these people have sacrificed to be able to come to Ghana to work with his organization. And it makes him feel proud to be right where he is. And just, the kids are amazing. On the blog, a little plug, there are now 31 student life stories from Ghanaian students. So you can get glimpses of their lives and what it's like for them. And they're beautiful. Like, my cousin was just looking at it and he was saying the faces are so sincere. There's like a certain look in the eyes of American teenagers that's a little bit rare, but Ghanaian teenagers, or I guess they're more middle school kids, it's just a really nice, like, just good people. And they have good stories. So I think it's worthwhile to check out.
When you go to Ghana, don't forget to pack what?
Conservative clothes.
Okay.
I said before I came to John, before I had met him by email, is it okay for me to wear tank tops and shorts? And he writes back, it's okay, but no one will respect you.
So a skirt below the knees and cover the shoulders.
Yeah, you feel more comfortable if you have slightly longer things, even as a guy. So cool stuff that's longer. And also just as sun protection. And then on top of that, sunscreen.
Okay. When did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
Closest to home would just be these flashes of the similarities between our cultures. Mm-hmm. African-American culture is a huge part of American culture, and a lot of African-American culture stems from West African culture. So, for example, Ghanaian music, you'll hear it and you'll kind of feel like in some way you're listening to something you might have been listening to in the U.S. at some point. Just in some ways, the way people think. And so I felt closest to home too. Just hanging out with the people and feeling loved and feeling like I was contributing and people were contributing to me. And it was a giant circle of love and happiness.
Okay. Furthest from home.
3 months can be a long time to stay somewhere, especially a developing country. And towards the end, I just was feeling sometimes like for about over 5 weeks, I think I was the only volunteer. So it was only Ghanaians around, which was fine, except that there were just some things, because they hadn't left Ghana, that they hadn't experienced. So, for example, a little annoying thing would be the internet, that it was so slow. A lot of people had not experienced fast internet. So just like that's just a small smidge of things that were frustrating that you can't really talk about because people around you just haven't seen other things. Just as like Ghanaian coming to America wouldn't be able to explain some things that Americans hadn't seen if they hadn't been to Ghana.
Hmm. As we start to wind this down, finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Ghana when what?
You really know you're in Ghana when someone with the most awesome rainbow-colored custom-made outfit walks by with something the size and weight of you on top of their head. They smile and wave and say, hello, are you fine? I hope you are fine. And you feel and you feel you're in Ghana and you're sweating.
And if you had to summarize Ghana in just three words, which three words would you use?
Friendly, fascinating, and fantastic.
Excellent. Lily, thanks so much for coming on the show. And once again, where is your blog?
It is at aroundtheworldl.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at worldlily, LILLIE.
And thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love of Ghana.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And just in case you're wondering the answer to the question, as I was, what is the city that Lonely Planet likes less than Accra in Ghana? The answer is Detroit. I don't have any internet resources for you today. I'll try and find some from next week. Or if you have some suggestions, let me know what they might be. I did get some feedback from listeners this week. From Alan, I heard my wife and I just returned from Bosnia and Herzegovina, Sarajevo, and Mostar, which is next to Croatia. We were also in Croatia, Montenegro, 1.5 years ago. I cannot disagree with you on the beauty of Montenegro and Croatia. However, I do disagree with you on the car rental. I found a very reasonable rate on the car rental in Dubrovnik and found the beauty of these countries can be more fully discovered by car. There's a pull-off giving some great views of Dubrovnik just as you're driving south of Dubrovnik. There are many small towns in both countries that you have to have a car to reach. As for the parking, I had no trouble. Traffic was light and travel by car excellent. There is accommodation everywhere and reasonable. I understand what you're saying, Alan, and I quite often will take a car in Europe, but I also understand what Ralph is saying. And if you go way, way, way back in the archives of The Amateur Traveler, there's a show called Driving Internationally. And in that show, I tell some of the stories of my experiences driving, for instance, in the small towns in Los Pueblos Blancos in Andalusia, Spain, where basically I ended up missing a turn and never thought I would get the car out of that space. And so there can be problems when you're driving, especially in some of those picturesque towns, which means towns that were not made for cars in mind. So I see both sides there. I think it's a personal choice. Sean says, my wife is from Kerala and was sad to hear your podcast. No mention of Catholicism being founded in Kerala by St. Thomas, which is quite unique to southern India and has a large population. In addition, Kerala was under British rule, so you obviously would expect to have only limited language issues in the way off the beaten path areas, a lot less than anyone else in the world visiting the U.S. The climate is also very unique in Kerala compared to the rest of India. Major aspects of Kerala were missed that are more substantial than the points that were hit, making me leery of other travel podcasts you have on other countries or states within countries. I won't even comment on Dominica, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, where I worked for 10 days a month for over a year. I will say locals pronounce it, and I have a spelling here, but I'm not sure if I know how to say this. Dominica. I could be butchering that. It's not Dominican Republic. Sean, I understand what you're saying. Basically, what happens is every show we do, whether I'm the guest or whether we're interviewing someone, every story you read also in the newspaper is very much influenced by whoever is telling the story. And that's always been true. You just aren't always aware of it. And so you're right. For some people, obviously, the Catholic history of Kerala is very interesting. In fact, it's very interesting to me, but it wasn't for our guest and therefore wasn't something they mentioned. And every story is like that, whether on The Amateur Traveler or really anywhere else. So I'm sorry if that one didn't work out for you. And then both Kathy and John wanted to make sure in talking about the Travel to Yemen episode that everyone caught that there has been an American couple kidnapped and there is a State Department warning now against going to Yemen. So I think I said that in an earlier episode, but I did want to emphasize that again in light of the news that happened just this week. In other news, I did learn that there are still some slots available on the photo tour to Egypt. They are starting to fill up, but it looks like probably you have another month before we run out of time completely on that. So I'm hoping some of you will still be able to make that. I could use your help. It looks like that iTunes has changed their design, and The Amateur Traveler is now harder to find. And one of the reasons is that I haven't asked recently for people to do a review of the show. If you like the show, I would ask that you do a review of it in iTunes so other people could find the show, because that is the number one way that people find The Amateur Traveler. I had announced that I might be doing a meetup in Miami, but my plans have changed, and I won't be going to Miami and Bahamas in June as I was originally hoping. I was hoping to go to a resort there as their guest, and they just never quite got their act together. I will be, however, in New York, and there will be a meetup. I'm doing a meetup with Gary Arndt of Everything Everywhere, who I also host This Week in Travel with, and a live episode of This Week in Travel that we will be recording in New York City. It will be the evening of June 23rd. So check that out. I don't have a location for that yet, but I will post that on the Facebook community, again, which is facebook.com/amateurtraveler. I'll also send it out to the newsletter, and I'll Twitter it and put it on the discussion board. So hopefully that means you'll find it, especially since it's about a month away. If you're planning a tour for this year, remember that I can save you 10% off any of the Globus tours. That's Globus, Cosmos, Avalon, Cruises, and Monogram. And you can find out more details about that at amateurtraveler.com/Globus. With that, we're going to wind this show down so that I can enjoy the rest of my Friday night. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Catch me on Twitter at Chris2X, and as always, thanks so much for listening.